Hello and welcome to the Compass Podcast, the only and therefore the best podcast dedicated to proof of work mining. Today we got two regulars on the stream and also two YouTubers in their own right, Michael Carter, aka Bitspeed Trippin, and Seth Estrada, aka Mine Your Biz. These guys are awesome. Be sure to subscribe to their YouTube channels. And while you're doing that, subscribe to the Compass Mining channel as well. Feel free while we're talking here to send some comments into the chat room. We can kind of answer those as we go along. Michael, Seth, really excited for you guys to be joining us on today's stream. Of course, we are proof of work stream. We're not necessarily a Bitcoin stream or anything kind of siloed. We typically talk about Bitcoin because obviously that's the 10,000 pound elephant in the room. But we're talking today mostly about altcoin mining, talking about some GPU work, some stuff that we saw at CES this year, and just kind of digging into what you guys see happening in 2022. Want to give the floor up to you really quick, just for maybe for like 30 second introductions for people who have not come across you guys before. Michael, I'll lob it first to you, and then Seth would love to get an introduction.
Yeah, sure, man. Thanks for having me again. It's always fun to come in here. We always kind of navigate through a lot of different topics and stuff, and I think it's good. So folks that don't know me or the channel, Bitspeed Trippin, been around for quite a long time. I think I'm one of the oldest YouTube crypto mining channels back in 2013. Every time that people hear that number, they're like, wait a minute here, man. Like, I wish I would have found you back then. Mining, all mostly focused on mining, how to teach people to get into this space and participate in the, you know, this decentrally. And yeah, it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, pretty much a range of hardware and content related around that, and mostly observe and report. So it's, I do it myself and I show you how I do it. And then we have a conversation of how things can be better and maintenance and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And my name is Seth. I run the channel Mine Your Biz, and I'm part of the class of 2017. So got in significantly later and leaned very heavily on some of the content, some of that groundwork that Carter laid years before, you know, and always in your debt, always in your gratitude for sure. But moving from 2017 forward, my content kind of leans a little bit more towards, at this point, tracking portfolios, having a bit of a game theoretical perspective, making sure we're making smart choices with any coins that we mine, and really trying to have a focus on the fundamentals of proof of work when we're evaluating new projects, maybe to add to a portfolio, while still, you know, contending with the realities that proof of stake has taken a significant amount of the market cap in the class of 2021. So yeah, 2020, 2021 has made it a very different game, but I'm still trying to speak reason to that new class of crypto investor and miner.
Yeah, you brought up a great point to kind of start off the show, and we'll probably get into it later because I want to talk more about updates on both your guys' projects to start off. But proof of stake obviously has kind of taken over a huge cap of crypto's market cap. Bitcoin is obviously still the largest cryptocurrency by market cap, but everything else is almost entirely proof of stake, and Ethereum is quickly moving that direction. So be interested to get your thoughts as we kind of go along the conversation. But I'm going to toss it back to Michael. Can you guys give us like an update on what is happening with Bitspeed Trippin Media? You guys are growing really big right now, and it's pretty awesome to see all the stuff you guys are doing.
Yeah. So, we're kind of branching horizontally in different services. So it's there obviously have the media piece that have had since 2013, really just covering our journey through, mining and exposure and just, kind of using that Cunningham law of like, here's how I do it. And then somebody else comes back and corrects something, or they'll say, hey, here's how we do it. And really leveraging the community as a whole. We've really expanded out of that to do a lot of other services. So we have obviously our own mining farm, a little over 2,500 GPUs, down to 130 ASICs, S19s, and looking to expand that even a lot further down also where I live. That's up in Wisconsin, and we're looking to build out a relatively larger farm. Around 10 megawatts is the goal, but we're going to start it as a crawl walk run. So we're starting with a 1.3 megawatt container and moving all S19 Bitcoin miners, and then looking at how to expand that to possible co-hosting for GPUs and stuff. So it's we're not looking to do co-hosting necessarily for the S19s, but looking to hit that part of that market that isn't there out there right now from a co-hosting on GPU side. So just using our experience and leadership on that kind of space To be able to manage that kind of thing. So there's that portion of it. And then there's also consulting and auditing services and stuff that we've been doing. Just there's a lot of investors in this space, and they're investing into proof of work in some of these larger projects, especially in the US now with China shutting down. And there's a lot of those third party companies that are helping fund that. And it comes down to like, how do we get a third party audit on that, and who can do that kind of work? So we kind of really stepped up into the game to do some of that work because we have the experience on, you know, the hardware itself, and we can identify this stuff and then do that kind of stuff. So it's just a really branch of services, and I'm trying to grow that team horizontally. So it's a lot of learning through that phase of like anytime you hire folks, like trying to make sure that, you know, are they energetic about the space? Do they understand it? How can we get, you know, the team built around that? So it's been, yeah, we're growing it. We're at 8 people now. So that's pretty good growth so far. And we're looking to expand here in the next couple of months too. You guys will see some more positions around that too. So yeah, growing like crazy right now.
Yeah, I'd love to see like the media side itself. That's something we're doing at Compass pretty aggressively, is growing Bitcoin mining media and Bitcoin media. And it's great to always see like someone else kind of doing that, kind of coming up together, growing the pie. Seth, I want to throw it down to you. What have you been up to since we last talked? I think it was like in August or September you were on the stream.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty much been a bit of the same, where there's been a bit of a move with my brand, the Mind Your Biz brand, to really focus on more of the privacy aspect. There's a kind of a growing problem with public ledger technology, and we're seeing it now in the infrastructure bill here in the United States, that depending on, you know, the stroke of a pen can make something like Bitcoin or Ethereum turn it from being something that's very freeing and very empowering to the sovereign individual to something that could potentially be really damaging to people's privacy and their financial sovereignty, because anyone at any time can surveil your holdings. And so that's kind of been part of the messaging and the branding shift. I think I mentioned it last time that I was on the show, that's it's inherent in the brand, right? Mind your biz, meaning like back up, like mind your own business. And that's definitely the increased focus of the Mind Your Biz brand. We have gone into a consumer device, and it's just a flashing service at this point. I'm just going to call that what it is. Instead of sourcing some really cheap drop shipped junk from say AliExpress, as people have done, and then called it something as audacious as the Freedom Phone, we just use something that already works, and then we just reflash it with better software, and then we add accessories, and we help it be help people actually gain the habits that lead to better privacy from big tech anyway. Nothing gets rid of surveillance, of course, and I don't want to turn this into a tinfoil hat session. But
please,
I think
do.
Yeah, right. Well, that's one of those sessions, one of those podcasts. I didn't know. Here's the thing. I was on Rise TVX not long ago, and that guy is awesome. I love that guy to pieces. But we can talk conspiracy theory and whatever else. And
yeah,
but for right now, like that's kind of the big shift for me. Also, kind of returning to a bit of infrastructure, not at all like what the Bitsby Trippin crew is doing, but we are looking at rolling out infrastructure for, again, because we're acknowledging that proof of stake is here and it's happening, but for validators, not so much for masternodes as much as validators for proof of stake network. So that is something that, you know, within the crew, like, I mean, like friends and family, we're pretty good at, and have some interested parties there. So nothing big to announce there, but the privacy side and the consumer product, that's pretty important to me. So I'm going to continue with that. I can feel good about that. Should we return to a bear market, helping people who made tremendous wealth for themselves in the bull market, once they go into the bear market, understand how to just make better choices, not make dumb OPSEC choices, and not harm themselves or their future.
Totally. And yeah, I think that's something that most people, one, are not thinking about, and two, there's not a lot of educators out there who actually know their stuff. And so it's only going to grow in importance, especially with how open Bitcoin is. It's funny when you talk to people who are getting into Bitcoin for the first time, they think Bitcoin is private by default. I always hear that, even from people who are like academics working on their PhDs and stuff. They always think that is not the case at all. So it's important that we have educators like yourself kind of addressing that. While you brought it up, I do just wish to jump into it. Proof of stake has really taken over a huge portion of the crypto market cap, but also GPU world is kind of suffering because of that. A lot of coins are moving to proof of stake, or they've kind of moved over these GPU coins that used to kind of be in the forefront. How are you guys responding to that, maybe on a business level with your personal farms, and then from a content creation standpoint with your YouTube channels? Are you comfortable moving into proof of stake, talking about that, kind of talking about the finances behind it? It's a little bit less intricate than, you know, setting up a farm, obviously. Seth, I'm going to throw that one to you since you kind of brought it up. Really interested to get your thoughts.
Sure. Yeah, I'll be able to punt this over to Michael pretty quickly, because for me, it's not as big an impact on my bottom line. Just full stop. I am not managing a farm that's of the same size as Carter's. I have been asked to advise and to consult on operations that larger or larger. And I mean, Sorry, Michael, why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free? I'm very happy working with other people's hardware. You know, take that however you want, but I'm happy as a clam walking through the hot aisle, cold aisle, and, you know, the various kinds of jerry-rigged setups that we do within GPU mining because of the efficiencies versus, you know, the cost benefit. There's cable management and all the rest, like some of the crazy stuff you see in those operations. Still hashes, still makes money, still gets satoshis at the end of the day. So yeah, for me, not a big impact, and kind of coming to grips with what the market is saying very clearly. Like, people are voting with their satoshis, they're voting with their dollars, they're voting with their ETH, they're voting with all these other coins too. So me being able to pivot it's been relatively simple. But knowing how to deploy cloud infrastructure and then knowing where to go to help decrease the attack surface from big tech like the Amazons and the Googles and the IBMs and the Azures and, you know, the major players in that space who are sometimes a little bit tired of having blockchain infrastructure run on their cloud and have a history of shutting people down who they don't like. That's kind of how I'm having to respond, is figuring out, like, how do you plan for fault tolerance in a world where you don't want to have to run your own micro data center that's just for blockchain infrastructure, but then also with the realities of cloud infrastructure being the way it is, how do you prevent shutdowns and loss of connectivity and ergo loss of income if you're running a validator? So that's all it is for me at this point.
Totally, Michael. I'm going to punt the same question over to you. It's kind of changed a lot of the GPU mining landscape.
Yeah, I mean, so there's always, it's been a risk for a while. I mean, since 2017, we've been looking at the transition from Ethereum. I think I look at it a lot more, I would call it kind of almost a macro level. So we look at just the inertia from the space and GPU mining in general and see that, not saying that something's going to fulfill in that gap when Ethereum eventually does go away, but I think there's enough interest in the space and there's a lot of interest in development. So I look at it also from, what are the developers of some of these other chains trying to bring to the table? Are they bringing any other innovation that maybe was not accepted in some of the major primary chains? And does that help that layer one proof of work coin find a spot in the world? It's a big world. There's not a lot of people that you know, prospectively mine right now. But as that conversation with like Bitcoin critical infrastructure, you see proof of work, you see the importance of the infrastructure level. And then you see also these other networks that are providing other services start to get some level of maybe some of that momentum. And people really start to distinguish the difference between proof of work, proof of stake, you know, a random chance system distributed versus deterministic system that may have other, you know, things that we will find over time may have bad behavior from a centralization, just the natural, you know, gravitas that happens when you have a proof of stake system. I look at it a longer scale, right? So we're hedging on both, right? So we have Bitcoin miners, because China shutting down gave us an opportunity to be able to participate in that a lot more, be able to get access to equipment at a competitive rate. So including that into our farms was a critical, you know, move. But I think that, you know, Ethereum, as it starts to transition, the funny thing is we're already using some of those layer twos, right? So when we mine Ethereum, we're using Matic payouts, right? So it's because Ethereum. So even the mining industry kind of pivots to the tech side to where it leans out costs and expense, right? So, you know, pools have adjusted to make sure that miners could still participate. A lot of people don't understand that the fact that that occurs, but that, I mean, we've already kind of made that move for like the most profitable thing, which is Ethereum mining, moving to a layer two as a payout, right? So I think they can coexist by and large, but I just don't see, and I mean, I had this conversation in 2014 when like everything was moving to ASICs. You had, you know, Dogecoin, Litecoin, everything that was GPUs after Bitcoin stopped doing it. It was like, there was so much interest in the GPU mining space, and that interest is driven because you have this barrier to entry thing to where anybody on the planet that can get access to a GPU can participate. And I think what ends up happening is people start to get away from it, and then they realize like, wait a minute here, I want the grassroots market participation. How can I get grassroots market participation on the security side? Well, you start with CPU or GPU. CPU gravitates towards, you know, botnets and things that have a lot more, there's a lot of CPUs out there, and the architecture and design is a lot more simpler because you can, there's CPUs everywhere, where GPUs take a little more effort. So I think, you know, the chains that gravitate to that GPU side, you know, they're just going to be there. I don't see that going away anytime soon. We will have probably a pullback in the amount of participation if Ethereum does finally move over to proof of stake. But we've seen that, right? The market, what happens is the hash rate contracts. Some people capitulate GPUs, and you're still going to have a baseline of people that are going to do it. And then an equilibrium will be created on a certain power rate, which right now is probably anywhere from 4.5 cents to 6 cents per kilowatt, that the folks that stay in the GPU mining that believe in it will mine really close to just barely making a profit or just covering their expense. And you'll have the network contract some. And I don't think it goes away. And, you know, that's not saying that anybody else doesn't come out with some other innovation that is proof of work that wants to take that the amount of potential GPUs that are out there and offer up, you know, something that will attract them to start mining a particular coin. I mean, it's been a while since we've seen a different coin come out with some innovation that attracts a lot of GPU miners over to it. And then it starts getting price discovered from people that are like, yeah, cool, I'm not going to mine, but I will buy it. You know, we'll see. I think there's a couple coins out there that are going to take the torch, as it were, when Ethereum moves on. I think Ethereum Classic's your safest transfer of that hash rate because it's the least effort. Mind you, it's like water finding a way, right? What's the simplest way that I can transition from one thing to another? Ethereum Classic is a lot like Ethereum, and people are going to change a few numbers. They're not having to reconfigure their farms. It's around the same power standpoint. It just makes sense from the simplicity. Now, we could have debates all day long if Ethereum Classic should hold that torch or not. You know, having a few 51% attacks against it and that, and made a pivot and change to have checkpoint blocks, you know, with its mess, its multiple exponential subjective scoring tech that's in it. But then you also, you know, you have a handful of other things. Ergo is really pushing. Flux is really moving right now with some innovation when it comes to parallel asset mining. Ravencoin just had its halving. It's typical after a halving, hasn't moved much from a price discovery standpoint, but still has some possible inertia, especially if it gets listed on Coinbase, which just updated its status from, you know, submitted to review. So who knows if Coinbase is going to add it? They're going through a review. They could come back and say no, right? But you look at some of that, and you look at the grassroots folks that are behind it, you know, of innovating in that space. And I think you still have your micro economy with it, but we're going long on it. I mean, we're actually updating the farm to the Ampere A4000s, 5000 GPUs, which again, gamers don't hate. There are production like workstation cards. They are not your gaming cards. We're actually moving a lot of those through crypto world and a lot of our older stuff, cleaning up and selling. So yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it going away ever. I think it's always going to have some inertia there, as it's been since the beginning.
Awesome. So yeah, you brought up a few different points that we can kind of follow down, but I think I want to stick with the social media side for a second and talk about like interest in crypto. YouTube is obviously like a huge way for newbies to kind of get into the space. And then even as they kind of follow their favorite sub, they typically kind of stick with them and they learn more along the way. So like Michael, I've watched a ton of your videos over the years about the kind of tech behind behind mining itself. I'm wondering from your guys' perspective, what's it been like so far this last year? Obviously January and February with Bitcoin's price pumping up, a lot of people flocked to YouTube accounts and kind of grew everyone's sub numbers. Then my understanding is it kind of flatlined for a while. Wondering what it's like at this point and what you guys are looking at for the next year. Michael, I actually throw that one back to you. Sorry, you just talked for a few minutes. So
yeah, no worries.
Sorry to waste the, I'll let you go ahead.
It's all good. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't have the explosive growth as some other folks did, but you know, a lot of our content, I'm make fun of this with the team. A lot of it is like, I'm like the old guy in the space. So it's like I'm not the young trendy guy. So, and a lot of my stuff is observe and report. Like I'm not, we're actually doing the stuff that we talk about and like we're building stuff. And I really look at this as my extension to have a communication with the community and have a conversation when it comes to like settings and just like, what does this GPU do? And I genuinely enjoy the hardware side of it, right? Like we just got the BC160s in, which are the new AMD mining edition. And I was like, let's build a video, you know? So like, I enjoy thoroughly that experience. However, when you observe and report and you don't put a lot of, I don't want to call it drama or anything in there, it's kind of like, okay, this is just like a status update, right? So I haven't really like, if you look at Bits Be Tripping of old, like it was like my mix of my like Anheuser-Busch marketing mixed with like, you know, like these are, you know, R9 280 toxics, you know, and I'm like into it and like talking, like I kind of just went more of like, let's just talk, observe, report. Will it change soon? I don't know. We got a couple of young folks that are part of it and we're looking at like TikTok and expansion. And I'm actually talking later today with Burgundy and Michael Cadwell, which made Cassius Coins. So like we met them out in Las Vegas and we're going to have a discussion like NFTs and stuff like that. And his wife is Chip Girl on TikTok, which is like 2.6 million followers. So it was a huge viral marketing kind of thing. And they talk, you know, old school Bitcoin stuff, like with regards to the Cassius coins that anybody remembers those. It was like the first kind of representation physically with a private pub sub key on a token. FinCEN actually shut him down. It was like a whole article where they shut him down back in the day.
I've got but a like having ripped off for a Cassius coin not long ago.
Absolutely. Oh, nice. Yeah. It's I have a 25 BTC one that I got like originally. And it was like, I mean, we had a great conversation. We had an interview with him out there and we're going to talk through, you know, just like, how do we, you know, collab on some of that. And I think some of that future for the space, really, this space works well when you have collaborations because people like who they like and they find who they like and they kind of follow that, but they don't realize that there's a huge amount of other types of information and sources out there. And I think, you know, like the same way we do in mining where we collab with each other. I mean, like I went out to DMG Blockchain up in Vancouver this last month and walked through their whole operations. They're a publicly traded company. And just to understand like what's their maintenance schedules, how do they handle stuff, you know, and like, there's not hardly any industries in this in anywhere where you're just walking into, I don't even want to call it competitive space. Because we're all securing the same network, right? The better and more efficient all of us are at doing this, like the better the Bitcoin network, you know, in that case, or the better any of these other networks, if we're talking Ravencoin or any of these other ones, like the better we are at it, the more efficient we are at it. It's better for the environment. It's better for all these other aspects, right? So I think in the soul.
Uh-oh, the YouTuber stream went out.
That's we lost him. He's back.
He's back. Should never happen on you. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the professional stream set up.
I got fiber, man. I don't know. And we should not go down.
I find that when I'm not using VPN, sometimes it's worse.
Really? I don't
know what's going on these days. But yeah, the just saying they're feelers out everywhere, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you had anything else to add there, Michael, I'm going to talk over to Seth. One kind of nuance I want to throw on the question as well, just talking about YouTube streams and people popping onto them and like the relevancy of different types of media out there right now as Bitcoin kind of trades crab. Have you seen like tribalism between coins kind of take a hit on how different forms of media are growing or not? Bitcoin maximalists really stay on Twitter. GPU guys stay on YouTube. Ethereum people are on Reddit. They're also on Twitter a little bit. Interested to get your thoughts on that.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, as far as my content goes, I mean, it hasn't changed all that much back from my time as a senior national trainer for Microsoft. And then prior to that for Google, and then prior to that for Samsung and AT&T and Dell. So I get a little bit too excited about tech. I get a little bit too excited about like features, I'll say. So like when a coin comes out and I'm looking at the roadmap and I'm evaluating a team, I'm looking at stuff that, you know, in a past life professionally, I was trying to evaluate tech that was maybe an acquisition by one of these companies, or maybe a new feature that was being rolled out, right? Or security stuff that that Samsung debuted years ago, and in most cases, years before Apple did, and saying, okay, well, we already had, you know, secure key stores here. We already had the option to do contactless payments at this year. I remember because I actually debuted the pilot here in the United States. Like, so kind of like trying to figure out what impact from the fundamentals, not the technicals, because that's just bullshit. It just is. Socket flow, it worked for a while. And it looks more like a rainbow now, right? Like we just know it's a lot of this stuff where we think we can just map some kind of a fractal onto price action. It just doesn't play out. It just hasn't played out yet. The fundamentals though, like Carter was saying, they do tend to play out. So proof of work, like that's why it's a cornerstone of the content that I create now, even though I'm not showing GPU mining per se. Last time around, one fractal that I think is going to play out again, and it's going to really work in Carter's favor for this next cycle of content, is the move towards workstation cards. I did that last cycle, worked out pretty well with the amount of inventory that I was working with that time. But now, you know, I'm a generation or two old, and I'm not going to worry about that anymore. But the content itself, It's for me, it's a lot more about the fundamentals of different projects. And I do a lot of actually a lot of sponsored work now too, but with the caveat that it's like, look, if I don't like your stuff, I'm just going to tell you, like, like if you want to, like, I'll treat it like a consulting hour or like a consulting day. You want to pay for the time for me to look at this? Awesome. Like, I really appreciate that. There are 8,000 coins just on CoinMarketCap, not the ones that we don't know of, right? Like there are 8,000 coins out there that are listed, probably 10 times as many that are not listed, and everybody wants as much favorable attention as they can get. So I'm totally okay with that. Like I sleep like a baby doing that kind of coverage right now on my channel, because otherwise the barrier to entry, like we don't, this run has changed the, well, it mimics a little bit the 2016, 2017 audience, right? The demographic that was coming in. It's like, hey, you know what? We don't have old bags. We're trying to get exposure now. We're trying to figure out how to get exposure now without necessarily being a qualified investor. So if you're a qualified investor and you're genuinely evaluating some kind of fractional ownership of a massive operation out of someplace like Kazakhstan, like you're not going to be looking for the latest gem. You're not going to be looking for, you know, for microcap gems in the crypto space. You only can get exposure to stuff that is at a certain point of development. And you get to that point at which you're trying to decide, is the fact that I'm combining my capital with this other group lending to a new economy of blockchain that is actually forcing centralization again, instead of, you know, actually running my own proof of work gear on my own with the economy of scale that I can muster on my own, versus like, okay, most people who are entering the space saying, I've got like student loans and a day job. Realistically, that's who's tuning in now. Like I've got student loans and maybe a day job to be able to like steal from a little bit. And maybe I can tease out a little bit of profit and then I can grow from there. Like it's, we're getting a new class of beginners. So mm-hmm. A lot of the content is, yeah, that I'm doing very much speaks to the middle of that group, not people who are wondering, should I invest in a large scale mining operation or should I like get involved in a cohort with a large scale mining operation? But also not the people who are like, yeah, I stole my student loan from this semester and I'm going to see if I can flip it. So YOLO, right? Like it is somewhere in between. TikTok has become a reality for me as well to answer your question from before, like, because that's where this class of investor lives. It's crazy. Got people who are into real estate, people who are into stocks, people who are extremely educated, actually. But then immediately following that video, you got like just like the lowest common denominator stuff of like, you know, fart and dick jokes.
Yep.
Whatever.
It's beautiful.
It's cost of doing business there, right? Yeah. Like you've got to know you're going to be ranked against that stuff.
Yeah, we started doing a little TikTok for Compass as well. We're trying to figure it out because it is tough to kind of gamify it. And it's funny how there's every single platform. You guys have been doing YouTube for years, and YouTube has that infamous algorithm that you have to work with it, and you have to kind of finesse it and figure out how to do it. And obviously, there's so many different types of media. Twitter has its own thing. Reddit has its own thing. And it's interesting from a content creation standpoint to recent attention. Maybe not recent. Really, really blown up over the last 6 months around proof of work and like the hysteria around proof of work boiling the oceans, and what your guys' take is on that, since you both are proof of work content creators in some sort of respect. Michael, I'll throw that one up to you. How do you kind of deal with this proof of work hysteria and like educate people around what proof of work means? Mm-hmm. And maybe a last question that people don't really like to ask. Do you think there's any validity in any of these criticisms, and how would you address them?
Yeah. So I've always taken it from approach that like we're performing a function and it uses energy. I cook, I do, you know, laundry. I do like I don't ever think about that power. I mean, there is from a cost standpoint. I think about how usually energy usage comes into it. First thing is usually like cost, right? It's like, I'm using a lot of energy in my house for whatever reason, not even mining, right? And you're like, oh, that's expensive. Maybe I should stop turning off lights and stuff. It was never like from an ESG really concern as much. The waste and all that was usually around like, am I using too much plastic? Should I not use straws and stuff like that? It was never on the energy use side. It was more on like material use of throwing away things and making sure I'm using less waste than that way. Bitcoin's really brought into this concept of like, we're using too much power. And it's like, wait a minute here. Like, power is just a function. It's a thing. Yes, there's coal. Yes, there's different ways to make it. But like, if you think of that kind of environmental thing, it was all about like gas burning cars. It was things that were related to overconsumption use of, you know, objects. And it's been turned into like just pure energy use issues. And I think, you know, Nick Carter, I think I saw Aubrey from Lolly did a really good piece on trying to explain, you know, how the right incentives are structured in Bitcoin to drive the needle to a more sustainable, cheaper price piece. That I think that conversation to understand the dynamics of building out infrastructure and newer, robust infrastructure that's based on, you know, a renewable thing, to where we're not putting, you know, hydrocarbons in the air and all that, is a good, I think it's already a natural occurring thing with crypto and Bitcoin that you want to drive to the most leanest way to do that, and including the fact that you're not going to put more carbon in the air type of thing. I think it gets kind of manipulated because people have tried to fight it in different ways of like, this is going to disrupt the fintech industry, or this is, you know, drug dealers use it or whatever else. And now it's kind of pivoted like, oh, let's talk about how much energy it uses. I think the big driver of proof of work in this space right now, especially in the US from our optics standpoint, is the fact because China shut down, we now become a lot more of a participant. If you look at that expansive growth that's came to the US and you model that from last year, we couldn't become as big of a participant. The things were built in China and you had buyers right there. And hey, again, it's like water through, you know, through a crack. They're building, Bitmain's building it there. They have buyers there in China. They can put it in a truck and drive it to them. It's a little more complicated to get through customs and get it through, you know, are you going to ship it somewhere? There's some global supply chain issues. Like, now that that's a thing, now you have us buying it. Now you have all this talk about all this infrastructure build out and what states and municipalities are going to accept it. I think that's the signal to noise right now, is because the US can become such a big participant in it. You know, Central America is becoming a big participant in it. And you're getting a lot of those kind of discussions and talk. And I think it's good because it lets people understand like why proof of work is such an important thing. You know, and like I was just in Dallas yesterday and we were talking to folks about crypto world, you know, because we're looking to expand a lot of different stores and stuff. And we were trying to explain, like, one of the questions were like, hey, we understand crypto. We think what's up with the mining? What's with proof of work? What's the innovation? You know, when you really look at that at the end of the day, is that infrastructure play that it has from securing the network, that you're taking essentially thermodynamics and you're transferring into a fact of security that upholds this network. And the only way to then break that immunity is to have more than 51% of that. Right. And it's just, it's such a unique way to offset, you know, the trust, because you're investing it, all your energy into producing things. And, you know, that, you know, producing these hashes to make a challenge, you know, the whole game theory of it is very interesting. But like, I think that it's going to get louder before people understand. I think it's going to get very heated. But I think there's the right inertia behind states that have already been moving. It's like a rolling wave and we're already past it. It's like, hey man, it's already on shore. And now it's going to be more like, okay, how do we do containment with the places that are very against it? And then you're going to have hot spots throughout the country, which I think we're already seeing with like Texas, Washington, Wyoming, that are really going to become leaders. And then it's going to hit a point, I believe firmly, that it's going to be considered critical infrastructure. And when it gets that designation, for a multitude of reasons, and probably the one way that we're not most familiar with, not being it that it's the monetary, you know, system, but more of this has been responsible for the growth of all this critical infrastructure, like power systems, and have more stability there, that if we don't have the consumers, like this goes away, it's going to literally become a fabric of, I think, the country. And I think other countries are going to see that and want to build up that infrastructure. And yeah, I mean, I think that that's going to be its driving force, is becoming critical infrastructure in the US, and then it'll start to be a leader in the, you know, European nations and places that quote unquote have energy crises. They have an energy crisis is because of their politics, right? I mean, they can put, nuclear power plants, they can put things that are more innovative. You know, you got tidal, you got wind, you got a lot of things that could drive their infrastructure. So I think we'll be a leader in it. And I think the outlook is very good. And if you've been to Texas, if anybody has any opposing opinions, go to Texas for like 2 minutes and talk to somebody in this space. I was down there yesterday. It was amazing. Like the energy down in Texas. I get it. Why you guys have an Austin headquarter now. It is. I thought Miami was like the pinnacle of the space. I mean, dude, Texas is it right now. So, yeah, you'll get that right energy with people and get the different perspectives from their perspective. But yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have to get both of you guys down to the new office once we kind of fully open it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, open invite for, we'll do this in live, like a Joe Rogan or something like that. Kind of gives you guys some cigars.
You can make it happen on Rogan. Damn. Yeah. Yeah, there with bells on.
I can't promise that, but we'll make it similar. I will say, totally agree with what you're saying, Michael, after talking with a lot of natural gas and oil guys out there. I think one of the biggest coups we're seeing with Bitcoin currently is that it's integrating itself into the energy sector. And with that comes all that PAC money that is used for on the regulatory front. I think that's really going to be something we see play out in the next 2 to 3 years. Seth, I want to throw the same question over to you. Proof of work, obviously, has kind of been a contentious topic. How do you see it as a content creator and as an educator in the space?
So, I mean, again, like Carter kind of illustrated before, I feel very free to be very, very opinionated. That's kind of on brand for me. And I guess in that respect, it makes me risk on in terms of being a public person. But like, I'm just going to say, you know, everybody who's promoting some of these measures and talking about like the worst case scenarios, right? These imaginary like worst case scenarios of literally the oceans boiling or whatever because of Bitcoin specifically, or because of NFTs of all things, like very specifically NFTs will boil the oceans. So every time you mention NFT, like whatever, it goes and automatically harvests all the trash from one side of the Pacific and then burns it in a pile over in front of the White House. It's just this terrible thing that people, like the picture they paint of how incredibly wasteful it is and how it's this very conscious thing that you're actively doing when you participate in blockchain, because you're complicit in that whole economy. I'm just going to say, man, this is the same type of, these are the same people who were protesting nuclear installations back in the 60s and 70s. And to you people, I say, F you very much. Look at how far you set us back. We wouldn't be having this conversation if we had better diversity of energy production already, right? Like, you're talking about Texas being this haven to cryptocurrencies. And absolutely, man, it's got nothing to do with like just oil or just coal. It's the diversity of generation. You got phenomenal facilities there. And yeah, you got your flaring operations that are a growth area for recapture in places like Texas. So absolutely, I agree with everything that's been said so far. But yeah, I'm gonna add a little more flair to it. Just like that bothers me, right? Like if anybody's watching and if you think my opinion matters to you at all, that bothers me. Like talk to me about it in person if you want, but you're not gonna convince me that participation in cryptocurrencies or in blockchain infrastructure is going to literally boil the oceans. Nobody has math that can prove that. And when you talk about energy generation versus wastefulness, well, there's a fixed number of GPUs in the market anyway. And if gamers are complaining about crypto, blockchain being wasteful, at least blockchain actually recaptures value. What are you recapturing when you play Fortnite 23 hours a day? I'm going to answer for you. Not a damn thing. So stop complaining. On ESG,
cool skins,
I've got a slightly different view. I've got some counterpoint to Cutter's take there, which I appreciate very much. And I agree with largely. I've got a little bit of counterpoint here. And that is where I differ is in that ESG. I do have a slightly darker view of one potential outcome for ESG. And that is, as we see leadership in blockchain infrastructure leave the shores of China and make their way into much more tightly regulated, but more ambiguously regulated territories like the United States, we can see that have a chilling effect on the censorship resistance and on a bit of the freedom and privacy aspect, the sovereignty aspect of cryptocurrencies. When you're telling everybody who's contributing to a permissionless system that they have to seek permission from a governing body, it's no longer permissionless. So just from a basic game theoretical standpoint, there are some problems that could play out if regulation comes down too heavy-handed and there's not a stronger or at least equal push from, you know, shout out to Sutter and Loomis, by the way, phenomenal voice of reason, as far as that goes.
Fantastic.
Right. Fantastic. Like, slow down.
I don't like politicians normally, but she's swayed my opinion. She's doing great.
Well, that plus Wyoming being able to represent DAOs as, sort of a quasi LLC on the national stage. Like these guys, like they're taking arrows that nobody else is willing to take. And my hat goes off to them all day. But if we can't prevent that from becoming a regulatory arms race against blockchain here domestically, then we have a problem also. Even though the infrastructure is there, the investment capital is here, the willingness is here, like you're saying, and it's not capital flight, right? It's nothing illicit. We're trying to secure something that's better. But yeah, there's like this really strong narrative. And unfortunately, it does kind of like dovetail with the conversations about ESG. Unfortunately, it's the whole like, well, you know, blockchain is obviously for criminals. So ESG, we have to govern it more. And I have a bit of a concern that we could go down a very dark path if we're not very vocal about shaping the politics behind some of those moves. And, you know, it's very anti-cypherpunk. You talk to a cypherpunk or an anarcho-capitalist and they're going to be like, well, voting is the illusion of choice anyway. What are you even doing? Like, well, I mean, I don't know, man. This infrastructure bill doesn't seem to be an illusion, nor do taxes. So we probably have to figure this thing out over time if we want to see the next decade or two of cryptocurrencies really achieve their highest possible vision and their highest possible function and virtue for society. So, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about that.
Just a follow-up question on that. Are you worried about tribalism within the space kind of fracturing the ability to kind of get that going forward? And how do you feel about things like Sat Center or Coin Center or anything like that that's kind of pushing an agenda for to kind of help out the crypto space?
Yeah, I mean, there's notable good actors in the space, like as you mentioned. I mean, we do need to have lobbyists and we do need to have lobbies because that's where that particular fight is happening, is on Capitol Hill. So again, hey, I really appreciate that Carter has done some consulting in that area, and it might not be a very public thing, but you know, for those of us who are paying attention, right, we know, and just saying, like, and for anybody who isn't paying attention, like, whatever. You missed it. Don't blink. But no,
my LinkedIn, LinkedIn's up. Everybody can look my LinkedIn up. They know what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, for my part though, like we need lobbyists. If you're asking like the tribalism. Yeah. You know, the sort of like the artificial controlled opposition sells tickets or whatever. And maybe that's politics in general, but we don't have anybody fighting on our side. Right. And if red versus blue or whatever, we don't have anybody fighting for our side right now on that side. And when you talk about ESG, it ultimately comes down to that. With a stroke of a pen, all of a sudden, I mean, we all had concerns about it. Were miners going to be brokers according to the new infrastructure bill? Were any kind of like infrastructure providers for blockchain, validators, masternode operators, enhanced service node operators, vis-a-vis projects that are no longer proof of work, like Oxen Network, and especially because they're so closely tied to privacy projects, you know, what would it take for some kind of a lawmaker to say, that's a little bit too dangerous, can't have that, boom. One signature gone, at least legally, you're now a criminal. So by somebody's definition, ESG can turn from something that is perhaps empowering, perhaps supposed to be this grand vision of a much more, you know, conscientious blockchain infrastructure space. But it doesn't take many signatures to move it from it being something very virtuous to something very vicious and very, very bad and leading to a dark future. So again, it's the same as before. I do have some concerns about that in general.
Totally. Echo everything you're saying as well. I think that the good actors in space like Coin Center, SAS Center, some of those lobbyists are really kind of helping move everyone forward, but they do definitely get a lot of flack, which is always kind of interesting to see people's bags kind of come out in those instances. Let's move over though to talking about kind of an outlook for 2022. That was kind of the whole point of the stream, and then we just started chatting, time got away from us. So let's talk about what coins you guys are looking at for 2022 in terms of mining, and specifically I'm interested in knowing how that pairs up against Bitcoin mining. Again, on the stream we really like to talk about proof of work mining. And there's a lot of different strategies for how you can mine Bitcoin or how you can mine different coins. I myself got into mining back in like 2017, 2018, because I was using Honeyminer CPU. I got my entire college haul to start doing it. I think everyone made like 15 sats over a few weeks. So
you're saying you took over the computer lab. Did the IT people there know yet? And have you gotten a call from the feds?
It's been a few years. I'm still good. But Honeyminer, rest in peace to my knowledge. I don't think they're operating anymore, but everyone can get into the space in different ways. And you can mine different coins, convert it into Bitcoin if you want, convert it into something else if you want. There's lots of different strategies here. Curious to get your guys' perspective going to this year, what your strategy is for your farm or for your investments or what you guys are telling people who are watching your stream. Michael, I'll kick it up to you first to start.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we're diversifying. So we have the Bitcoin miners primarily moving into the S19s from a branding standpoint right now. Not a lot of folks are doing like what's miner and stuff, but we went with S19s, 104s, so a series of Bitcoin mining. And then from GPU mining, right now we're essentially a 70-10-10-10 split across the handful of networks right now. So it's 70% Ethereum through Matic payouts. So that way the fees are down. So we get paid in wrapped Ethereum on that, and it's on the Polygon network. And that's going to continue until Ethereum does push through for a merge. And then from that, we're also doing Ethereum Classic and Ravencoin. And I have a split on the backside of it with some of the machines that we had that were optimized for Flux, Ergo, and Ubic. So there's a handful of other tokens there that are still... Ubic just did an update themselves too. So just hedging in on some of the other tokens that are out there. And then we always have a couple rigs that we try various networks with, sometimes for benchmarking. But like if you get into a network that's early and it has any kind of inertia, we always have a couple rigs that are targeted for those. You know, if it's Ton or any of the other new stuff that comes out, anybody that's been in the space long enough knows that if you get those first few days when a network launches, if you're paying attention and putting a couple cards on there, it's worth your time. We see that with like Raptorium and a couple other tokens that really kind of pushed hard initially. But, you know, it's not, you don't put the whole farm on that, right? So it's, you still got to pay the lights and the folks and stuff. So most of it still is on that, that standpoint. You know, we're not an investor farm, like the farm that we have. It's like just a couple of us. So like we try to hold as much as we can. And then redeploy some of those assets. So like a lot of the Ethereum and stuff that we had, we just redeploy into other projects, you know, to sometimes to support them in some way. I've done Gitcoin. I've done a couple other things from a donation standpoint, but really just be part of that ecosystem. So we're going to continue to mine on the proof of work side and then educate on, you know, with crypto world. You know, we try to have, when you look at the whole, how does like BBT make money and that kind of thing? You know, there is the farming aspects of it. And then there's the media aspect of it. And then there's, you know, the services stuff. So anybody that's doing any kind of farm stuff, you have a lot of experience. You should leverage that in other ways. There's a lot of other folks that are looking for that knowledge or looking for those services. So being able to exchange some of that service time too is also another way to remain profitable, especially in low times. And that could be for like people that are capitulating and want to get rid of their mining hardware. And you're a paid service to tear that down. I mean, there's a range of opportunities. I always talk to people about that on making sure that you're staying viable and in the space in even the darkest of times. But yeah, I mean, very pro proof of work. We're still going to continue, you know, mining for that. And I think there's a couple networks out there. Oh, the other 10% that I didn't say was Ravencoin. So it's a little less. I think we actually drew it down to 5 because it's halving, and with the price discovery, haven't really had any kind of lift yet. It really needed to be around 18 cents to stay where it was at from an output standpoint. You know, after the halving, went from 5,000 coins to 2,500 coins, and the price stayed essentially flat, which is usually atypical when a coin, you kind of get that pre-buy of the news, the sell of the event. And we'll see over the next couple months if there's price discovery on it and we can take some of it back onto it. But yeah, I mean, that's really kind of where we're at from, you know, the proof of work side. A little blurry, ain't I? Let's see here if I fix it.
Yeah, something went a little wonky there.
Oh my goodness.
We'll be okay though. Seth, we'll throw it to you.
Yeah,
I canceled. Get off the screen. Yeah. It's also talking about the financing side, since you mentioned that's something that you're going to more and more be interested to kind of get your perspective on how you are kind of setting up your portfolio going into this year. I think that's a huge question for a lot of people who are getting into the space right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm not super transparent with my portfolio, but I do like recently I have been talking a little more about how.
Tell us your bags, man.
Yeah, nah, man. That's just yeah, I'm so cautious of it. But I do run a public paper trade portfolio. We have the like very diverse basket, and we have it broken down according to GPU proof of work, CPU proof of work, hard drive mining, which is always like lol, but it keeps coming back, right? Like a bad penny keeps turning up. I say that, you know, joking. There are some projects there, of course, that have merit. And then FPGA mining and ASIC mining. And we break that down according to profit, including some mining tokens that are not necessarily, like strictly speaking, proof of work themselves, but are part of that ecosystem. So if, for example, if Compass as a mother company were to say, like, we're issuing some kind of governance token or some kind of like a dividend for some side of our farm, I would probably list it and just say like, cool, we're going to track this. Because I think it's important for us that like really zoom out and pay attention to all the different sides of proof of work. In my mind, this is a service to noobs in the space who are working with that much smaller portfolio. And maybe, you know, they're a little more risk averse. They're saying like, okay, cool. I've got a gaming rig. I can probably get like 5 more of these and make my first, like, you know, my first real rig. That person, that eternal beginner, is always coming into the space. They are. That's going to be an investor profile that keeps coming in. So that's why I have that portfolio there. For me personally, I converted to stables some of my portfolio, and yeah, but I held on to some moon bags. I've got a really old bag of Raven, for example, which I actually, if I'm being honest, I'm really pissed that I didn't sell when it was at over 1600 sats. Just call it what it is. I'm really pissed that I didn't liquidate into Bitcoin proper and just leave it in savings, the Raven that I had at that time, because they're a little bit older bags. But But yeah, so I'm into stables because I'm also into DeFi. And this last cycle, it something got triggered in me. I did go full degen this last cycle where I was like, all right, I see some really great plays here. And it's a bit like how Carter was saying before. If you got a proof of work, even if it's just a tiny rig, even if it's a gaming rig, and you participate early on in a project's life cycle, then you've got these really cool moon bags that, whatever, maybe you never liquidate them. Maybe it just winds up being a story 3 years from now, 5 years from now. But you were there and you got proof and nobody can take it away from you. Mm-hmm. And in the event that it does, you know, have a proper moonshot or, you know, really start to take off and go into price discovery and not like fizzle out like 90% of all these moon bags we all have. In the event that it does go into like hyperbolic price discovery, you did the work already. And even if you're not mining it any longer, it's a great strategy. So a bunch of notable projects like that. Carter was saying Raven, I remember when it launched, farm that I was advising at the time, they were really heavy into Raven. And then they were like, but we can't go all in, like how he's got part of his mind split. Because it's just not something that pros can do right at that scale. You get past a certain point when, and it's not that you're too big for your britches or whatever. It's just like the job description of professional miner means if you're on GPUs, probably Ethereum mining, right? Or Ethereum Classic.
A lot of that's for liquidity too. So, I mean, that's the one thing I know. I've talked about it before on one of the videos is like, we went into Bittrex and went in just as an example, and we looked at the market depth. And what people really don't understand at scale is there's the price is super last, like there's not a lot of depth. I mean, they're like Raven's pretty big, but it's not big enough at a scale. Like if you were mining at the output of the network, like right, the 2 days after the network halved, 7.2 million Raven coin weren't produced, right? Well, if you were to look at 7.2 million Raven coin, that's like $800,000 worth of Raven. If you were to market dump $800,000 of Raven in Bittrex, you can actually go out to like something like Bittrex because they actually show you the market depth and the impact. So if you go into like sell and you type in $800,000 worth of a sell of Raven, which would be around that 7 million Raven, you would see what would happen to the market. So it actually punched the floor all the way down to like 2 cents, right? So there's not a lot of depth. So if you have a farm that's pull in 8% of, like, let's say all the hash rate, like if you put everything on it, like some of the bigger farms, right? They literally would sink the market because there's just not that much liquidity out there. So you got to look at the big liquidity centers and who actually has that kind of volume. And then there's a strategy if you do need to sell that you're across multiple exchanges and you're doing that to make sure that you're not creating a huge arbitrage issue. So, I mean, there's a whole different of like, house, home miner, medium size, you're earning $2,000 a week, maybe like on 5 giga hash or something, versus 50 to 80 giga hash of coins plus, couple petahash of 10, 20 petahash of BTC. Like the 10, 20 petahash in a BTC, who cares? Like you can go and you won't tickle that price by 10 cents. So it comes back down to total liquidity. And that's really the difference and Ethereum has enough liquidity to not do that with. But like every other token at any kind of scale, you're going to move the market.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's not just the amount of like what price discovery is. It's also depth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's why in the portfolio that I run, the paper trade portfolio, we do talk about that on a regular basis. So yeah, these mid-cap coins like Ubik, which I know like Carter's got a soft spot in his heart for it. If he market dumped any of his holdings at this point, he could be a market mover. Like you could list among your services, right? Listed. You could say like, yes, Ubik market maker. So like these are things that, that can accidentally happen on some of these smaller networks, even at the small scale. And I'm going to characterize for my audience, 5 giga hash. It isn't the same as an industrial size mine, but it's not what an at-home miner is running on residential power. And if they are, they're tying a noose around their neck for the coming markets. Right. So
you can get about 2.4. out of, and then you're gonna tap out, and you can't use anything in your house at about 2.4 gigahash. It's just a math problem of how much amperage are you using. And most houses have 200 amp. Mm-hmm. Well, you're gonna use 110 amp at like 2 gigahash.
So. Sure. So get a secondary panel, right? Get a second panel put in, and ask your utility, like, hey, can I get a business line run here? And first off, after they say no and stop laughing, you're gonna realize your residential rate for power is such a kick to the teeth anyway that you need to just go off site, right? You need to get like a site just for this, and then you got to deal with security, not just the network, but physical security and all the other stuff. Like, you know, it's the joys of success in mining. Mm-hmm. But that at-home miner, there are some networks right now that make sense on paper. They look good, but like Carter's saying, the liquidity matters, the depth matters, right? So even whether you can see like, oh, cool, I'm going to do $1 a day on this old GPU, or, you know, $5 a day on this old GPU. Looks good, sounds good. Try to sell it. You're going to slaughter the goose that lays the golden eggs. It's not there anymore for you to mine next week. Like, keep on market dumping mm-hmm. for 3 weeks in a row and see what happens. So yeah, there's, I got to admit, I'm actually forgetting what the original question was.
No, it was a huge tangent that I was loving it. This is hilarious just to kind of watch.
Sorry, that's how you can pull me. Pull you through the tangents.
No, we're actually a little bit past the top of the hour. So let's do 30-second speed round questions to kind of close out. And we'll do them for all the topics that we didn't hit, and we could easily fill another 2 hour discussion with all these questions. But
this is what's going to get remixed for TikTok, and it's going to go viral. Just this segment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just you. Right. And then you're going to get canceled, and it's going to be great. So let's do Ethereum. Okay. Does ETH2 happen next year, Seth?
In 2023?
2022, rather. Sorry.
Well, according to what Vitalik has laid out for the new roadmap, not every single function of the merge will be complete and in production until 2023, 2024 anyway. So, yeah, I think we're going to see the next phase of the merge happen, but we will not see ETH2 achieve its final form for quite a while anyway. This is not over.
It's not over, Michael.
I know Tim and Ben pretty well, and I know that they have a very... pretty well from regards to reading a lot of their stuff and having conversations with them on the thing. I think technically they're going to feel like they're there. I think it's going to be a non-technical hold to pass into 23. And I bet you it's probably March of 23, realistically, when it actually moves over. Just because of what I've seen, and I know that they'll hopefully bring us up to date here soon, of where they're at or where they think they're at. I think that when you count back, when the code is frozen and they know on both sides they're done, quote unquote, and it's ready to merge the network over, move consensus, as we say it. Again, not all the features of 2.0, but just the consensus move away from proof of work. That checkpoint, when that occurs, you're going to have at least 3 months at a minimum of testing, like real world, no kidding testing. I know that they're doing testing, but they haven't frozen the code yet. So that plus 3 months, I think, moves to 6 months. So if they don't get it by March, that puts them at October of when they are at the point of like, okay, we're done. Testing is good. Everybody is good to go. Then they're going to have to pick a date forward from that. That maybe puts them in December of this year. Possibly. And I think that's just the math. I think that's what's going to happen. They would have to be super confident that they're good to go as early as March. And then you're going to have a 6 month runoff. I doubt they're going to do like EIP 1559, where they're like, you remember they had 3 months for March. Mm-hmm. We were on that call defending like here's some risk with it. And it still took them till August to get that out. And that was through a few different things of hiccup. We are talking about consensus happening on one chain and everything else happening on Ethereum 1.0, right? And that's the big part that I don't think anybody was really tracking from a technical standpoint, is the fact that Beacon will now handle consensus, but it's still all the smart contract and all the stuff is still happening on 1.0. So now you're having a separation of the consensus. Mm-hmm. There's a series of issues from assertions and everything that can happen to have issues. And even the last report that I've seen from them is that they still have situations they can get into that lock and freeze the network up on the consensus side, which will then halt 1.0. So it'll stop producing blocks, right? It'll stop being able to move people's stuff. And I think that whatever testing they're going to do, I'd be very interested to see who signed up, what smart contracts, how engaged is the community going to be to actually do testing? Because if we think of anything, right, new stuff comes out all the time. How much time do you actually allocate to testing your stuff on this new network? What kind of engagement are you going to get from the layer twos? What kind of engagement are you going to get from smart contracts that are out there that have lots of money locked up in liquidity and that they've actually tested it on testnet to make sure that their stuff's still going to work? Yeah. I'm just interested. And I think that's a 6-month time period. I think that's realistic if they freeze in March. So I look at it March of 23, I think is when they'll move it. I think it's just the realities of a $500 billion network or where it's at right now. Technically, I think they eventually will move it, but I don't think it's this year.
Okay. A little longer than 30 seconds, but a very thorough explanation nonetheless. And Seth, I'm sorry you didn't get to go on your rant. Next question.
I concur.
Yeah. Next question. And this will be the last one to kind of wrap it up. What percentage of the Bitcoin mining network will be based from at-home mining in 5 years? Actually, we'll do 2 years. We'll make it easier on you guys. So at-home mining is a huge thing in Bitcoin mining right now. But as you guys know, mining at home is not necessarily super easy. So curious to get your thoughts. Most estimates are around 1% to 2% of the network is at-home mining right now is what I've heard. It's probably even lower than that. Seth, I'll start off with you.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And I don't think I have a tidy answer for that. I think my answer is going to be a lot more like Carter's last answer. I think we have to see a radical shift. If we want to see more than 1% to 2%, that's how I'm going to frame my answer. If we want to see more than 1% to 2% being done at home with property centralization, then we need far better on-site generation of power. Micronuclear reactors for everybody. We got a POTUS running on that platform. They got my vote.
Michael, your thoughts?
I don't know if single miners keep winning blocks. I don't. This might become a trend. Good for the two folks that won it off of 126 terahash. I think it comes to a couple factors. I think the inertia of price discovery. If we get into a mega bull run and this thing pushes to $200,000-$300,000 in the next coming couple years, and production and difficulty hasn't really caught, like we really peel away, you're going to have a whole bunch of miners at home. Lots of individuals buying as much as they can, probably overpaying for a lot of things. I think you could probably get into a 2% to 3% market penetration. But again, these things use a lot of power. There's a lot of, a lot of noise with them. I think that's the kind of a deterrent from folks and us at having stuff at Crypto World where we've had S19s go to people and then they're like, they come back and they're like, hey, we love it. However, is there somewhere I can make it quiet? we're seeing that from a retail standpoint right now at the store. So I think those are probably the biggest impacts, but price is going to drive everything. I mean, if price goes crazy, you're going to have a lot of market penetration at home.
Awesome. I'm trying to boot up my own at home mine right now, two S19s, and it has been difficult to get everything kind of correct. So it's not quite online yet.
You'll like a video we got coming up. I have a single solution thing that we saw at CES. We didn't talk about CES too much. Nice. We're closing it out, but Fog Hashing, this company, they were there. Mm-hmm. They had their device running. They had an S19 in this it looked like a little swamp cooler. And it had a little dry cooler that set off to the side. And it had a single S19 in it with EC400 fluid in it. And you could close the lid and it was super quiet. And it was a 30 amp single connection and it had the plugs already in it. So I think that if you get like the innovation into that side where you have these the whole unit was $1,200. So you look at $1,200 plus your $12,000 miner, $11,000 miner in there, and you look at that and that becomes a thing. I told him if you can get that, keep that price point at that price point, people will buy this thing.
So oh yeah.
We're getting one. I told him I'll buy one, ship it to me. We'll do a video on it. So we're picking one up and then we'll do a video on it and see how it looks. We'll do that range. But I think that's maybe possibly a solution mm-hmm. for people that want to do it at home because it was dead quiet. Like I was like, this is amazing. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. And that brings up a kind of good point to kind of close the discussion on. Do follow both these gentlemen's YouTube accounts. They're awesome. great information on everything, even Bitcoin mining, GPU mining. Seth is going more into proof of stake and kind of the finances around all these topics as well. Michael obviously has some really great videos about booting up your own farm all the way down to like the technicals of something like an AMD card or whatever. Just like really in-depth stuff I'm not prepared to talk about. So
nerd
be
out,
sure
man.
To follow both of them. Yeah. Thank you both for joining us so much. And for everyone at Compass, I want to thank you guys for watching. Be sure to like and subscribe to our channel. And we will see you next week on Wednesday for a discussion with Rusty Russell of Blockstream, talk about Lightning and how Bitcoin mining fits into Lightning's architecture. But from all of us at Compass, that's a wrap.